Alison Annan, welcome to The Reverse Stick.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Look, for people who have followed your career over the years, your achievements are stunning, but it had to start somewhere. When was the first time a stick came into your hands?
I think I was around 10, and I used to play soccer with my brother, and we weren't allowed to play together anymore, and we had one car, so we chose hockey as a sport where we both could play in the same team.
Okay, so it was a... Can you explain to people Wentworthville in New South Wales? You were born there, and what sort of hockey culture was there in Wentworthville?
Well, I didn't live in Wentworthville. I was born in Wentworthville, but I grew up in Campbelltown, southwest of Sydney. I really didn't know that girls played hockey until I went to sort of my later years in primary school, until I was about 12. So I started my first few years, I just played with boys hockey, not knowing that girls played hockey. Then I came into contact with a man called John Robinson, who was a school teacher. And he actually told me, girls do play hockey, and this is the team that you could go to. So he introduced me to what I then referred to as girls hockey.
Do you think that playing with boys at such a young age had an effect on your career later on? Was it something that steeled you for what was to come?
Well, I definitely do. I think that playing with boys gives you another idea of, you know, how fast the game is, and boys are stronger and faster, and they didn't treat me as a girl, they just treated me as one of the other players, which was great. I think I learned a lot in those early years of being able to, you know, move the ball quickly and have very quick skills, which was fantastic.
Was hockey the sort of game, once you got the stick in your hands, you knew that this was a game that you could play really well, or is it something that, you know, developed and grew over time, and as you were in the game, you realised you could play a little bit?
I think it was the latter. You know, I just enjoyed playing the sport with my brother, being outside and playing games. And I didn't really take it, you know, it wasn't something I was really serious about. I did athletics as well, so I had other sports that I was doing. And in the end, when I met John Robinson, he was the person who said, hey, look, you can do this pretty well. And then in school hockey, you know, I started getting selected for the school teams and that sort of stuff. So it was just, for me, it was just playing the game and, you know, being in the team with my brother.
We spoke to Terry Walsh on the show, and he was of the opinion that having, as a youngster, multi-sport background was very important to later development. Do you think that was important for you to have played all of these other sports as well?
Look, I did a number of different sports, you know, through softball, cricket, athletics, you know, hockey. I did a lot of different sports, and I think that's really, really essential to learning different development skills. And, you know, you can't just play one sport and go out playing one sport. I totally agree that, you know, multi-sports is very important.
Now, the first time we sort of came to the wider hockey attention was at the 1993 Junior World Cup. Was that a surprise for you to be in that team?
Well, no, because I'd been to the Olympics in Barcelona, so being in the Junior World Cup team wasn't a surprise. I think it was something that after going to Barcelona, playing in the under-21 team was the fun part, because you were back with your own age group.
I forgot about the 92 Olympics, actually. That came before 93, didn't it?
Well, most Australians try and forget about the 92 Olympics.
Yeah, I'm sure the players would like to forget about it as well. But it wasn't the only Olympic games you went to.
Yeah.
It wasn't the only Olympic games you went to. You went three across your career.
Yes, I was very fortunate to be able to compete at three, the first one was a disappointing start and experience, but, you know, the second two made up for those 92.
And that 92 Olympics, that was between two great eras for Australian women's hockey. I mean, you'd had the three gold medals on the trot, and then 92 came along where you didn't do so well, and then two gold medals back to back, finishing in Sydney.
Well, I know that, you know, it was definitely after 88 the girls had won gold. I don't think that they, I think in 84 they didn't win gold. I think it was another team, I think the Dutch one that won it back then. And, you know, it was really a historic gold medal. It was the first gold medal, for, I think, for the Australian team at the Olympics. And you had a lot of heroes. I know that I had a few heroes in that team and idols who I looked up to become an Australian hockey player. And that was, so that was an essential win for Australian women's hockey in 88 and for our sport.
Now, Olympic Games weren't the only things you won gold medals at. There's a couple of World Cup, Hockey World Cups in there as well. Four Champions Trophies gold medals. We're about to see the demise of the Champions Trophy. Do you think that's sad for the game? Would you like to see them continue with a trophy like that?
I would, but, you know, they're adding and taking so many things out of the hockey program at this point in time in the international calendar that it's almost hard to keep up with everything that's happening. And the Champions Trophy is historical. It's for the women, it's historical. For the men, it's even more historical. And, it would be disappointing to see it go. And I understand that, you know, times change and things have to, they're trying to grow, but have the sport grow. But taking away such an essential historical tournament is a little disappointing, yeah.
Alison, as a player, and I was lucky enough to see you play a couple of times, you seem to just be instinctive. You just happen to know where you were at any given point in time, and the game seemed to come reasonably easy to you. Is that sort of rather naive from the outside? How much work were you putting in to make it look as though you were so doing it easily?
Well, it doesn't come easy. It's something definitely you have to work very hard at. And look, I love the tactical side of the game. I love reading the play, and that was something that I spent a lot of time on and gave me an edge, I think, in the end, of being able to be at the right place at the right time. It's definitely a part of the game, so and part of the game that I love.
Were you one of those players that just sucked up everything the coach said?
Well, not always. I think, it's well known that Rick and I had disagreements. But I was, you know, I like to learn and I enjoy the game. And you know, if you enjoy something that you're doing, then learning's not such a hard thing. It's almost enjoyable. So I did take it a lot and learn a lot also from the players around me, which is fantastic.
You mentioned there you had disagreements with Rick Charlesworth, but you also have been publicly quite praiseworthy of the efforts that he put in to get those girls to where they were at.
Yes, I don't deny that he was absolutely one of the best coaches, or the best coach that I've ever had, a tactical, technical coach. I think he was very innovative, and he was a leader, and we needed that stage in our career, so it was fantastic being coached by Rick, definitely.
Now that you're in the coaching ranks yourself, how do you think you would have been, as a player, being able to coach yourself, or vice versa? Would you see yourself butting your head up against yourself?
Oh, I just that's funny. I've never looked at it that way. You know, how would I have been as coach myself? You know, I do see in some players that I coach myself in the way that I was as a person, and the way that I was as a player, and I guess. I think I would have been an enjoyable person to coach.
Look, one thing you do hear sometimes, especially from other sports, is that great players often struggle to move into coaching because they don't really understand the struggles that players that don't have the skills they had go through to try and maintain that level of performance. Was that something that you found hard when you first stepped into the coaching box?
Absolutely. It's definitely something that I did experience in the beginning. And being at a, you know, coaching a different culture, I was able to put it under the, you know, it's a different culture, and learn, and I spent some time learning how to coach different cultures, which did help me learn to coach, which was a very good experience. And also having something to, you know, they're not going from a player to a coach, you can't do that transition too early. And being in a different culture helped me just take the time to become a better coach and learn and experience it.
When you got to the end of your playing career, was it obvious to you that now is the point that I've got to give up the playing and I've got to move on? Or was it something that dragged out for a little while, you know, you're thinking about it, but you kept playing?
Well, no, I actually wanted to keep playing, but chose to, you know, not play under a certain coach. And I didn't agree with the things that were happening within the team and thought, okay, I can do two things. I can choose to do something that I'm not 100% behind, or I can choose to, you know, not play. So I chose not to play and definitely retire. I did that a few years after. The choice not to play anymore, or at least put myself up for selection, and you know, it was probably a disappointing end to my career, not being able to finish it playing, finish it not being selected, so to speak. But it was definitely a choice of my own, and it didn't drag out. It wasn't something I thought about a long time. I was very clear, this is not what I like. I don't think we'll be successful this way, and I had other views. And I just think when you have such a strong idea of what needs to be done and it's not that way, then you need to stop yourself as a player.
Yeah, fair enough too. Now, did the coaching come about because you sought out to move overseas, or was it by circumstance it just happened to be an offer that wasn't in Australia?
Well, I moved to Holland to play hockey, so I went there to experience playing in a overseas, and just really, I've always coached. I've always, when I was a player, I was coaching teams and training athletes, and it helped me learn the game even more, you know, and also how to explain different skill sets to youth players. You have to explain it very easily so that they understand it, which made me understand a lot of things very much better. So it was something that I always did, and I knew that I always wanted to be a coach. It was something that I, you know, wanted to put back into the sport that gave me so much as well, which is, you know, it's just something that's in my blood. I just love the game, and I love playing it, but also putting back into it.
How much different did you find the setup in Holland? I think personally, they've got a great club setup, and it shows in the results of the national teams. Is it, you know, was it a shock to you to see the way that the Dutch went about it, or you pretty much knew what you were stepping into?
I had no idea what I was stepping into, so I, you know, I didn't know that they had such a great club system. I hadn't really done much homework on the Dutch system. I just knew that, you know, I'd heard that it was good there, so let's go there. And you know, when you're there, it's exciting, it's new. And once you've been there for a while, you can see the differences between having a club structure and having no club structure. Not always, the one's always not better than the other.
No, I'd like to see their model expanded more, personally. I'll think that club hockey is the way for the sport to move forward, but can you see that Dutch model being exported around the world, or is it something that's peculiar to Holland?
Well, look, it's in Argentina they have a club structure, so they have something very similar, but they have multi-sport clubs. And I just, you know, I think it costs a lot of money to run a club in Holland. And I just, you know, sometimes I think if you look at the stadiums, for example, in Perth and Melbourne and the Gold Coast, if you've seen all of the clubs there and the structure there, there's a lot of games being played in the same location. I guess that, which makes it more accessible for people to see high-level games and quality games and that sort of stuff. But it lowers the chance of training times, because there's a lot of people training at the same location at the same time. So that has the benefits, and it also hurts things that, you know, don't help the game.
Alison, just moving on to your coaching at the moment, you're in charge of the Dutch national women's team. Now, they're a team that when you stepped into that role, you're not looking at rebuilding, you're not looking at trying to develop anything. How much harder is it taking a team that's already close to the top as opposed to a team you know that's struggling and you can see definite points where you need to improve them and to move them forward?
I think in both, and it's almost an assumption that there's no need for development or rebuilding. That was definitely the case when I took over the team. So it's the same, it's just at a different level. There may be less number of things that have priority to focus on than other teams, but it's definitely, it's the same. You know, you coach in the same way. Just the focus on priorities is different, I think, or the number of priorities is different when it's them to focus on.
As a national coach, when a player enters into that national setup, how much work do you think that you should be doing on that player to improve him, or should that player be coming to you pretty much a finished product and it's just up for you to get him to work into a system?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think we don't do spend a lot of time on the technical aspects of the game. We do a lot of behavioural coaching, which means we spend more time on what we want, the performance behaviours that we're seeing. So how can we have them behave in the way that we're going to win the game, and not so much on what they can do with the stick and ball. I think once they're at our level, we shouldn't be teaching them how to play the game. I think that should be something that they're at level when they enter the program, which means that we can move to the behavioural coaching side of things.
Now, you've been on the Gold Coast, I believe, doing a bit of spying for the upcoming World Cup. What have you made of the competition there?
Well, it's certainly been interesting seeing our competition plays in this, six teams in the World Cup here. So it's been interesting, the five teams. It's been very interesting watching those teams play. And it's also been interesting watching the teams play that aren't going to the World Cup. It's made it very difficult for World Cup competitors. Watching Canada play has been really interesting. Malaysia have made it difficult for a few teams here. Even though they're losing, with a number of goals, they've made it very difficult, which has been interesting to see, and it's been interesting to watch how those teams have made it difficult for top-level teams. India went against England.
Yeah.
What did India do to make it so difficult for England? And not so much looking at just England and how they play, but how other teams are playing against them to make it difficult for them. So it's been very interesting week here.
Yeah, I must admit, I've really liked what Indian women's hockey's doing at the moment. I saw the game last night, and I can't remember seeing an Indian team rush back in defence like that, male or female.
Yeah, certainly doing very good things there. So it was good to see, and it's good to see more women's hockey teams playing at a high level. I'm happy to see the teams are closer together here.
Now, we mentioned you've done quite a little. But bit of hockey, quite a lot of coaching in Holland. We've recently seen the Euro Club Challenge and for the men, and there was a great deal of hoopla about that. What about the women's side of the game? I'd like to see the Euro Club Challenge promoted as much for women as men. Is it as strong a competition?
No, look, the Euro hockey club championships are played over 4 days in the women. It's not extended over a different, the European hockey leagues played almost three quarters of the year with round games and quarterfinals and semifinals and finals weekend. So it's not as big for the women as it is for the men. Given the international programs, I prefer to keep it back, keep it with the 4 days instead of extending it over such a long time.
Now, Alison, looking through your biography here, the list of achievements, the number of gold medals, there's tournament victories, teams of the year, player of the year awards. I mean, you've won just about everything as a player that you could possibly win. What about as a coach? What are your aspirations as a coach?
Look, in the end, as a coach, you want your teams to win. That's your goal. And aside from that, I want my players to become better people and understand themselves more to be able to be the best they can be. It's not just about stick and ball stuff, it's definitely about the person. And if we can focus on giving them an experience to make them better people, which makes them better hockey players, then I'm a very happy coach at the end.
Well, Alison, one of the other things that you happen to have is three letters at the end of your name, AOM. Well, OAM, I should get that correct. Get that the right way around. You're inducted into the Australian Sports Hall of Fame as well in 2013. How important was those little three letters on the end of your name? Does it make you feel good when you see it up in print?
It does. It's special. It's definitely something very special, and it makes you a proud Australian to have the three letters behind your name. Even prouder to be inducted into the Hall of Fame with a lot of other fantastic athletes, Australian athletes, and it just, you know, it reiterates what you've done in all the years that you've been representing Australia, and even to the extent, you know, that you definitely want to put it back into the sport, but sometime in the future maybe put something back into Australian sport.
Do you ever have to pinch yourself, Alison? I mean, when you look at your name up in that Australian Sports Hall of Fame, your record stacks up to anybody in there. Is it something when you look back on now you can't quite believe?
I don't really often look back at it. I just, it's something that I'm, you know, it's happened. It's in the past. I look forward to the future and see what that brings, and just be proud of the moments that we spent together in the hockey rooms. And I've come away with a lot of great friendships and great experiences through doing what we all loved to do. And you know, we were part of a very good era of players. And you know, that's more important than the Hall of Fames and the OAMs at the end of your name.
Yeah, probably is the time you spend with your teammates.
Yes, definitely.
Just one more thing before we let you go, Alison. I don't know how much you follow Australian hockey at the moment, but there's been a move to change the Australian Hockey League to a 9-a-side competition with all sorts of funny frills added onto the end of it. A lot of former players aren't happy about it. Are you aware of the situation at all?
Well, I did read about it, 9-a-side, mixed hockey. I like the 9-a-side game. I think that's that'd be interesting. Less people on the field, more space. I'd be interested to see how they're going to implement that with mixed hockey. In Holland, we have a sport, korfbal, and that's sort of a sort of netball, except the net's in a different place. And that's played mixed, so which is interesting. I just don't know how that's going to work with hockey. Hockey being a more physical sport. It'd be interesting. I'm looking forward to watching the first game.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think the board's actually making a decision today, this morning, apparently, about whether they'll go ahead with it. So we'll find out more in the future.
Yes, I did understand that. So I'll be seeing a few this afternoon. So see what's going to happen.
Look, Alison, it's been a pleasure talking to you this morning. All the best with the upcoming World Cup and your work with the Dutch women. The hockey you guys are playing at the moment is fantastic, by the way. It's really good to watch.
Thank you. I enjoy watching it as well, which helps.
You mentioned playing mixed before. Can you see women competing with men evenly on a hockey field, or is it just something that we should not think about?
No, it will never happen. No, it will never happen. They'll never be able to play of equal speed, which would of course be interesting. When, you know, how would they implement this 9-a-side mixed hockey game? But that would be more the interesting part before anyone decides whether it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. how would it be played? And, I think that's the interesting part. Physically, it's not going to happen.
Thank you once again for your time this morning, Alison. It's been a pleasure talking to you. We look forward to seeing how you go at the upcoming World Cup, and I'm sure your girls are going to be at the pointy end of it. And with whatever comes after the World Cup, I assume you're looking forward to another Olympic program?
Well, we'll see after the World Cup. I've got my contract's until the end of the World Cup with the possibility of Tokyo, so we'll see what happens.
Once again, good luck, Alison, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.